I'm Jesse Lubinsky.
I'm Donnie Piercy.
Hi, I'm Jeffrey Heil, hosts of the Partial Credit Podcast, a part of the Education Podcast Network.
Just like the show you're listening to now.
Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others.
Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back. Steve here, and today I'm talking with Jen McCarty Plucker, EDD. She is a Director of Learning and Development and Literacy Consultant. She is also the author of an incredible book called Inspiring Lifelong Readers, Using Inquiry to Engage Learners in Grades 6 through 12. You're going to love this book. You're going to love this talk. So much to learn and think about. Thanks for listening. And oh, by the way, before you go, you know, I'd love it if you could figure out how to help me help the podcast out. What do you think about that? I mean, there's a couple ways. I mean, one of the ways is just share the podcast with, you know, one of your friends, your colleagues, your family members. Just tell them about it and send them a link. That'd be so cool. Another way you can help out the podcast is go to my website and leave a review as well as subscribe to the website. And finally, you know, you could also go to on my front page, there's a little link there that says, buy me a cup of coffee. It says, buy me a coffee. And you could click on that, and that takes you right to where you could donate a dollar or two to help me take care of some of the expenses associated with doing a podcast. What do you think about that? There's three ways you could help me out. That'd be so cool. Thanks so much. You are awesome. Enjoy the show.
And then a few years later, at a national conference again, telling the story, and another publisher approached me, this time Solution Tree, and said, the story needs to be told. There's a lot of books for engaging readers at the elementary level, but our secondary teachers need the support. And it was at that time that I really reflected on, how did I learn to do what I was doing?
It's the Education Podcast, your favorite show, with lots of groovy guests, and they share what they know. So crank it up to 10 and let your neighbors know that here's another show with Dr. Steve Mileto. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. With Dr. Steve Mileto.
Jennifer McCarty Plucker, EDD, is a Director of Learning and Development and Literacy Consultant. Dr. Jen McCarty Plucker aims to support individuals in personal, team, and professional growth. Jen facilitates virtual and on-site professional learning workshops with teachers in their efforts to engage readers, provide choice and voice, and foster critical thinking across the student's day. Prior to joining the team at Mackin, she spent more than 20 years in public education as an English teacher, speech coach, reading specialist, and district administrator. Our focus today is on Jen's book, called Inspiring Lifelong Readers, Using Inquiry to Engage Learners in Grades 6 through 12. Jen, thanks so much for joining me on the show. Say hi to everyone.
Hi, everyone. I'm super excited to be here. Thanks so much, Steve, for having me on the show.
Well, glad to have you here. And our focus today is your book, Inspiring Lifelong Readers, Using Inquiry to Engage Learners in Grades 6 through 12. But before we talk about your book, let's talk about you as an English teacher. What do you like best about working with kids?
I loved being an English teacher. I worked primarily with middle school and high school students. And what I loved about it, honestly, was the energy of adolescence. I just enjoyed being with young people every day. I really enjoyed getting to know them. I especially appreciated the window that I got at this time in their life. You know, when they're an adolescent, it's such a time of discovery, figuring out who they are and what they want to do, and they're testing the boundaries of independence. And I loved it. I felt like I learned as much from them as they did from me. And I was really fortunate because in the English language arts discipline, we have freedom in terms of the content. You know, we're teaching skills. So there were so many opportunities for students to write and read and talk about the things that they were interested in. And it also gave me an opportunity to maybe see gifts in students that they didn't yet see in themselves, and being able to help them see that in themselves and build some confidence around an area that maybe they didn't know anything about was really rewarding. So I actually really miss it. I miss being with teenagers every day.
That's cool. That's awesome. And you know, you hit the nail on the head because there's so many cool things about the ages. My favorite age to teach, I'm a former world history teacher, actually history teacher. I taught little bit of everything, 6 through 12. And my favorite grade to teach are 10th graders. They were blessed.
Me too.
Cool.
My husband teaches 7th grade, and I bless him. There's a special place in heaven, hopefully, for both of us because of his time with 7th graders.
Very much
but American Studies is what he teaches.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I would be saying the same thing. I'd be like, 7th grade. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good for you. Thank you. You know,
thank you. Yeah.
Stuff like that. Cause I know like, one of my favorite things with 10th graders, I like to tell people is that they're no longer 9th graders. They've gotten through the whole, for the most part, they're beyond 9th grade. All right. All the things that are still happening to them. And then, they're not seniors.
Because
they're a trip, seniors are. And so 10th, my favorite, then 11th grade, that group right in there, there's neat ages. So they let you be goofy and we'll be goofy too. So I like that. But, so cool. Thanks, Jen. I appreciate you sharing that. It's fun stuff. I understand missing the kids because it's a cool time. Let's shift to your book now. It's called Inspiring Lifelong Readers, Using Inquiry to Engage Learners in Grades 6 through 12. So why'd you write this book, and who's the audience? Who are you focused on?
So the audience of the book is 6-12, really language arts teachers, and primarily because that's my experience. Although the principles in the book, I really learned a lot from elementary colleagues, and I've had success working and coaching social studies teachers, science teachers, career and tech ed teachers, even a kindergarten teaching team to use the principles with success in their classroom. But why did I write the book? I was actually a super reluctant writer. I really never thought that I would write a book that wasn't kind of in my life goals. I wrote a dissertation for my doctorate and thought, that's it. I'm done. That's good. Nobody will read that. It's on a shelf somewhere, but that was hard. But I had an opportunity a couple of times to share stories about the work that we were doing in our classrooms at national conferences. And the first time I was invited to speak, I had written an article for Ed Leadership about the work that we were doing, and I was invited to speak at a conference and was sharing what we were doing, and a publisher approached me and said, you really should write this down. You should put it in a book. And I was like, who has time to do that? I'm very funny. And then a few years later, at a national conference again, telling the story, and another publisher approached me, this time Solution Tree, and said, the story needs to be told. There's a lot of books for engaging readers at the elementary level, but our secondary teachers need the support. And it was at that time that I really reflected on, how did I learn to do what I was doing? Well, I learned because I read books by Kelly Gallagher and Stephen Lane and Alfred Tatum and Chris Devani and Kylene Beers. They took the time to write it down, and it transformed me as a teacher. And so while I sometimes feel like, do I really have anything new to say? Sometimes that doesn't matter. It can be a remix of the work and the shoulders that I stood on as I was trying to figure it out in the classroom, that can maybe inspire and support our teachers that are in the classroom right now, figuring it out. So it was reluctant, and it was one of the hardest things I've ever done. But I'm pretty happy with the product and the response that we're getting so far.
Very cool. And you should, it's very good. And that's a neat story that you're approached by two, and it's like kind of like they're dragging you in. You know, no, but good stuff. Well, I'm glad you changed your mind and went about doing it, because that's good stuff. You got a lot to say. In the introduction, you recall a discussion with a parent about her child's reading ability, and she surprised you with her question, which went something like this. She said to you, "What are you going to do about that?" What did that question inspire you to do? I mean, tell me a little bit about as you were dealing with that moment, and then what it inspired you to keep on doing.
Yeah, that was a transformative moment as a teacher. I think I always felt like I wanted to have all the answers and the skills to support students, and I felt pretty confident in my teaching abilities, but I had a student who I was really struggling with. Fortunately, I had a peer coach at the time, and I was talking about this student, and I said, I can't engage him. He doesn't like English. He doesn't want to be there. I don't know what to do. And this peer coach said, well, there's probably something else going on. You need to get past the behavior. Have you had him read aloud to you? And I thought, we don't do read alouds in 10th grade English. So I did. I pulled the student out of class, away from peers, and I had him open up of Mice and Men. And I said, will you read a little bit for me? And I was absolutely floored. He had a really hard time decoding the words on the page. And I was teaching in a high-performing high school. We are cited in U.S. News and World Report as one of the best schools in the area. In fact, my family can't afford to live in nice. The attendance boundaries of it. And so I think often students who were struggling were hidden. And this was a student who didn't qualify for special education. So I thought I was doing the right thing by letting the parent know that your child is struggling to comprehend. And in my mind, I went to school to teach composition and rhetoric and literature. I didn't go to school to teach reading. So I don't know what, you know, but when she asked me the question, I couldn't say that. I don't know what we're going to do for your kid. So instead I said, I'm not sure yet. Let me see if I can find some help and support. And I went to our special education colleagues and my administration and the guidance counselor and the district literacy people. And we did a lot, but I didn't know what I was doing. And I would love to say that we figured it out for that student that year. But what it did illuminate was we had more like him. And we needed to figure something out because it's never too late to intervene. And for us, ninth grade was early intervention. That's when the students arrived. And it gave me an opportunity to go back and learn. So I went back to school, got my K-12 reading license, did that first. I thought, well, if I can learn how to teach reading, I can translate it to older kids. I can take it from, you know, five-year-olds to teenagers. But what I didn't realize was that our kids are super savvy. And by the time they are in 9th, 10th grade, they've developed all kinds of coping mechanisms, which is great, but it masks the true cause and the challenge that they're having. And I wanted students to have literacy proficiency when they walked across the stage, not a bunch of coping skills are good, but I wanted them to have the skills. So I went back then and got my doctorate and really focused on engagement and motivation for adolescents so that I could marry that with the strategies and the skills, and had great teams of people in my district, a really supportive principal who was open to my own action research and my own inquiry in figuring out what would work. And after a few years of study and trial and error, we developed an intervention program, a ninth grade class. We called it Academic Literacy, and it was a double dose class. So students still had language arts with their ninth grade peers, but they also had a reading class on their schedule. And I'm happy to say we had statistically significant gains for students, and they were growing at a rate 4 times their peers. And we were able to really narrow that gap. Like I said, we were at a high performing school, so their peers were performing at the 70th, 80th percentile nationally, and they were at the 15th, 20th. And so we had a lot to do to get them to narrow that gap with their peers and be able to leave our high school, not just on grade level, but above grade level.
You know, it's interesting because those coping skills that you talk about can mask so much if someone doesn't delve just a little bit to say, let's see if you're just talking with me or if you are understanding stuff that you're reading, and instead you're just keeping me from figuring that out.
And it's powerful.
Really
supportive families. You know, a lot, we were learning that we had some straight A middle school students who also needed the literacy intervention because they weren't going to have a parent sitting with them when they're in college. And we want them to be able to do that work independently.
So much. There's so much there. Because it can stop them from being able to achieve all kinds of things down the road if not found out soon enough. Let's look in the book a little bit more. On page 14 of your book, you have a segment titled Investing in Student Relationships and Community Building. Could you talk about why you introduced this topic early on in your book? I mean, why is it important?
It's cliche, but it's true. Our students really don't care how much we know until they know how much we care. And I think with adolescents, they may act like they don't care or they don't need you to care. But we know, and the research supports, that when the environment is warm, inviting, positive, affirming of whoever is in the classroom, that's when we see academic achievement. And for me in my classroom, I didn't want a classroom that was just warm and fuzzy, like fun to come to. I wanted a classroom with high expectations and really great learning. But if I was going to ask students to be in a productive struggle, if I was going to push them to do things that were hard, they needed to feel really safe. And I wanted them to look forward to that class period every day. And when we build community, and if we're taking an inquiry approach to our learning, the learning happens with and from each other. So I also wanted students to feel like if I'm not in class, my classmates are missing out. Not if I'm not in class, no big deal. I'll get my missing work and do it on my own time. I really wanted our class to feel like we're doing work together. And I do think we have to invest in that at the front end. And we can do that with content. We don't have to do a bunch of things disconnected to the learning, but we can bring students into the learning and really honor who they are right from the start.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think a big part of that safety that you're talking about is such a huge deal, because if you're going to be made fun of, if you're going to, not necessarily by the kids, by the way, someone's going to say something to you that's going to make you go, yeah, I'm not reading again, not out loud, and not showing you what I can or cannot do again. So just a huge, it's so important, that safety feeling in that room. In chapter two, it's titled Immersing Adolescents in Rich, Diverse Text. You list five supports that will help the reader motivate adolescent readers. Could you talk about those supports?
Sure. I learned a lot about motivation and engagement by studying John T. Guthrie's work. He's one of our leading researchers when it comes to adolescent interest and engagement in reading, but also Daniel Pink in his book Drive, where it just hit home so many of the principles. And honestly, some of it was counterintuitive for me. I very much thought that I needed a lot of extrinsic rewards, carrots and sticks, to get students to engage in class. And we have a lot of challenges, I think, in education with our grading systems and what we're using to motivate our students. So I studied and against my gut sometimes applied these principles. So one of them is having students seek mastery. So whatever they're doing, they are trying to get better and learn something. One of the best grading principles that I brought in, I got from Rick Wormley. He has a policy of ABC, do it over. which meant that in my high school four credit class, students could not get lower than a C, period. It meant that at the end of the first term, I had quite a few incompletes, which my registrar didn't love. But we had to like change our mindset around, this is about you learning, and you might not learn it the first time. So that's okay. We're going to try again. And I thought that was going to make my life really hard. Like kids were going to do a halfway job the first time because they would have a chance to do it again. And the reality was students felt more confident and they felt honored in their learning process that I had very few students not giving their best effort the first time. And then they felt relief when I would give back a paper or give back something and say, you're not quite there yet. Try this part again. You don't have to write the whole paper, but this part, we need to see more. And let me get you some coaching. We'll work on that. It became so successful that at the very end of my first year of this, I had students on stage. They were performing scenes from A Raisin in the Sun. And I had a group get a B+ on it. And where they fell down was they weren't projecting enough for people in the back of the theater to hear them. So they came up to me and they're like, tomorrow, we want to redo our scene tomorrow. And I was like, you got a B+. You're not doing it over. They're like, please, please, please. We can do it better. We know how to do it better. And I'm thinking, I don't have the theater tomorrow. We don't have time. We've got more to get through. School's almost over. So I just said, okay, you guys, you get your team together, record yourself projecting louder, and I will take a look at it. And they did. They got together outside of school because they wanted to show, I mean, I'm sure they wanted the A, but they also wanted to show that they had learned and could do what was being asked of them. So seek mastery is number one. Number two is pursue meaning. So this is that idea of if we don't have any sort of personal connection to what we're learning, we don't care. I was coaching some science teachers, and they were getting ready to teach meiosis and mitosis. And they were so excited about it. And as I was listening, I was not all that excited about it. I'm like, I got to help them engage teenagers in this. So I said, okay, just pause for a second. Let me formulate my own question when it comes to this whole idea of meiosis, mitosis, cell generation type stuff. So my question was, why is it that the gash I have on my leg from when I opened the car door on a hill and it caught my leg is taking forever to heal? But my daughter, who skinned her knee on the playground, it's like almost better and it's been no time. They wanted to answer my question in that moment. And I said, no, don't answer my question. Teach me the content so I can answer my own question. I'm going to be more engaged in what you're talking about if I can figure out my own question. So when we can have some personal meaning, some connection to that, that is motivating for us to learn.
I like that.
Three is offer choice. And with adolescents, it can be just two options. Our adolescents are like toddlers. They don't want to be told what to do. So the minute we assign reading, everybody's going to read this book, the motivation decreases. It's innate. It's just part of their development. So if we can offer a couple of choices, and this was a huge shift for me as an English teacher, because we taught the whole class novels, many of them, and I had to move away from that and introduce choice into the classroom. And if we were going to read a whole class novel, because there's some value in that and having that community experience, then I needed to have choice in how students were going to be approaching the book. Four is let go of the controls. Also hard for me. I'm a type A person, like control. I like order. But definitely inquiry and embracing questions in the classroom allows students to own their learning. And then making learning, or in this case, reading social, is important. Our adolescents are social beings, even our introverts. That's a misconception to think that our quiet kids don't want to be social. Yes, they do. They just, it drains their energy. So we have to make sure that we give them opportunities to get their energy back. So I took ideas. Again, Stephen Lane wrote a book. Thank you, Stephen, on engaging readers. And I took some of his great ideas from his book and used them in the classroom to get kids talking about books and sharing their thinking out loud and in a controlled way, because I needed that.
Nice. I like that. This is great stuff, because this is, you know, when we talk about reading, I think one of the things that often, you know, it's difficult for someone, and I'll use me as an example, because I don't really remember figuring out how to read, but I remember that I had all the books I ever wanted. Family members bought them for me. There's books in the house. My parents read. We were involved at discussions at the dinner table. It's not like you just sit over there quietly or something like that. We're, you know, all engaged in all that sort of stuff. And I read, and I read from early age and pushed myself, because I wanted to read other things and stuff like that. So it was difficult for me to, when I, you know, looked at friends who didn't read or didn't even have a thought about it. And I think about that from an adult perspective, which is, that's why we have to pay attention to that. Cause, you know, going back to, you know, figuring out ways that we can get them motivated, get them, encourage them to make that the steps. So,
yeah, that's right.
Good stuff. Jen, throughout your book, you share stories. The section is called Stories from the Field. And I love this. Could you explain why you added these?
Sure. So I learn best through storytelling. When I was learning and wanting to try different things in my classroom, I really needed to have a sense of, okay, well, what does that look like in the classroom? And I also think it adds some credibility to the work, that I'm not just coming from a theoretical perspective and giving the research and saying, go do it in your classroom, but I've lived it. And I think it's helpful to be able to see, okay, well, what does that look like in the classroom? And so far, the response from readers, a lot of them being my family members, have been that they really are enjoying reading the stories from the field. So I'm happy that my editors embraced that and allowed me to put those, weave those in throughout the book.
Well, they're awesome. And so I'm not a family member, and I enjoyed them. So
thank you.
Kudos on that. That's a great, great part to add, because it gives life to what you're talking about through your eyes. So I think that's thank neat. You know, in chapter 3, and by the way, listeners, I'm not going through every chapter of the book. You got to buy the book so you can get that. But we are going to go through a couple of them. So, you know, in chapter 3, using inquiry for English language arts and literacy, you note this. When considering an inquiry approach to ELA and literacy instruction, educators are often concerned that the classroom will be too chaotic. And I love this. All right. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So that was my concern. I had this opportunity to be a part of a team of teachers to try a different way in the language arts classroom. And I was the only one in my building. I was with a team of teachers here in the state of Minnesota. And it was this incredible opportunity. I actually am not sure why I said yes to it. I probably had a principal push me. But it was super scary, because I was a pretty traditional language arts teacher. We would read a book, a novel together, and then we would write a paper, and it was all the same formula. And then we would do a poetry unit and throw in some vocabulary. I think that we had fun, and I tried to make it really engaging for students, but it was pretty traditional and very much chosen by me and the team of teachers that I was working with. So when I joined this group, I was really scared because I am type A and I like all minutes to be used during the class period. I don't like wasted time. Drove me nuts when students would line up at the door before the bell rang. And I was like, and then I'm just fighting them. Sit down. We're not done yet. What are you doing? And it, kind of doing that whack-a-mole with kids. And so I was scared. But what I learned is that A, there's many rooms in the House of Inquiry. It is fine. If I'm type A and I need structure, I can do structured inquiry. I'm going to decide the question. I'm going to decide the activities. I'm going to give you a couple choices throughout here, but we are going to pursue questions and we're going to try to find answers and perspectives around those questions. And that was a shift. I could do guided inquiry, which is what most of the book is, where I'm still deciding those overarching questions that we're going to pursue. So instead of, instead of reading Night as our novel, we're going to explore the question of, is the opposite of love hate or is it indifference? Elie Wiesel says it's indifference. And we're going to read Night. I picked that book. I came up with the question. I'm pulling lots of other articles and TED Talks and podcasts and building this rich library for students to explore, but they're going to have choice. And then they maybe have some choice in how they're going to show what they've learned. So there's still lots of structure for us type A people. And then there is, of course, open inquiry, think genius hour. So lots of opportunities to do that with students. But in none of it, it's a misconception that it's chaos, that it's not planned, that there isn't structure, that there isn't intentional planning. In fact, we do so much planning around the structure of it so that during the class period, we can let go and be really responsive to what students need in the moment. The other thing that really helped me was Chris Devani wrote a book called So What Do They Really Know? It's this assessment book for English language arts, which I also needed at the time because I had a misunderstanding of assessment, that it wasn't multiple choice tests. It's like actually measuring what students know and can do. But in the book, she provides a workshop structure. So I had witnessed this in the elementary classrooms. They knew how to set up a workshop so that students were doing their own just right work. But I hadn't translated that to my 50-minute language arts class period. So in essence, the structure is we're all going to start together. We're going to do a mini lesson. We're going to read something together. We're going to talk together just about 10 minutes or so. Then the bulk of the class period is that guided practice, work time, application time. And that's the time where I have this opportunity to pull small groups or work one-on-one with students. And they are pursuing some of their own learning. And that is more of they're in control. And then we end together. And there's some kind of accountability at the end of the class period, whether it's an exit card or a whip around, what's a discovery that you made today. And that solved my lineup at the door problem because we were spending the last 5 minutes of every class period together sharing what we were learning and what new questions were emerging. So definitely not chaos. Is there noise? Of course, because that's when it's the buzz of learning and we want that, but definitely not chaos.
Oh, that's so cool. I mean, it really is, because I have had colleagues who they're afraid of something that might look like chaos, and it might mean that they lose control over the group. And when I say that, it's not complete loss of control, but just even the little bit of, you know, people going over here and going over there and doing whatever. And I love the opposite of that. It's like we should be having people wanting to close my door and wanting to...
Yeah, exactly.
What are you doing in there? I didn't tell you. Anyway, exactly. But I love it, though. This is, you know, it's awesome because it's, you know, learning is chaotic like that. And you give them some opportunities to take ownership of it and such. I, you know, and it also introduces you to when you vary what they're looking at and reading and taking a sample of and such. You know, it's funny. I was a principal observing an English teacher's class a bunch of years ago, and they were doing some reading circles, right? And each circle had some different book, and so I was going between the circles, and I sat down at this one table, and I was really enjoying the discussion. And afterwards, I went up to the teacher, and I said, why did you tell me you were reading such fascinating books? I had never read Ender's Game, if you know the book, and by Orson Scott Card. And he said, you've never read that? And I said, nope. I said, but I guess what I'm going to go get today. I don't know about the rest of the books in the series, but that book is amazing. Simply by listening to the kids talk about their thoughts about the different things and aspects of the book. So cool. So yes, chaos and learning, and we're doing all kinds of cool things. So I love that. Throughout your book, you have reproducibles like an ELA inquiry unit of study template and questions to guide quantity decisions for inquiry text sets. I mean, why'd you include these?
Well, I have been in consulting work, working with teams of teachers as they're making their shift from maybe a more traditional approach to using inquiry in the classroom. And a lot of this came from our work together, that they're like, we need a framework, we need some structure, we need help us figure out how many books do we buy if we're going to do a book club unit. And so some of it was already created. It was the unit of study template is what we used when I was developing these units. I did it by myself first, but then my colleagues all came along with me afterwards because they saw the engagement and the joy, and they heard my excitement about it. And then the research supported it, of course. So I know how helpful it is to have some tools and a starting point. And then my editor really pushed me to fill them out so that there's an example in there, not just the blank document, but an example, which was sort of of course, I would do that. I want students to have exemplars. Why wouldn't I have thought to do that myself? But it's why there's such great editing teams to push us to put our best work out there.
Well, I love them because they really give an added touch to the book with, you take away. You could start following what you're talking about. Read it tonight and put it in there tomorrow. So I love that. Very practical book. So good stuff. All right, so I have to say this because I used to ask authors, tell me what your favorite chapter is. So I got beyond that because a lot of times they tell you things like, that's like choosing my favorite kid or something like this. And so instead I do it now. And my favorite chapter is chapter 5, Creating Conditions for Student Engagement. This is where I was going with that noise stuff before and the chaos also, because I love that the fact that it's leading up to this. And you say this, teachers and students alike want to be in a class that is engaging, one where everyone looks forward to spending the time together. I love this. Please share a little bit about what you mean.
Sure. Yeah, so when I was first teaching, I wanted to be the favorite teacher. I wanted to be the teacher that students talked about, and they would come into my class and they'd talk about other teachers. And he's so funny, and this was so fun, and we did this. And I realized, also a great book, Courage to Teach, Parker Palmer. He really challenged me that I need to be me and bring my identity into the classroom and then make room for the identities of the students that are there. And it gave me this freedom to be authentic and to let students be authentic, and that I'm never going to be the one who has great jokes. It's just not my personality. But I know how to listen. I know how to be empathetic. I can tell stories. And when I could really discover who I was and what my identity was, it just opened up joy in the classroom. And then when I shifted from trying to be the English teacher that maybe I admired, who wasn't me, or tried to teach in the way that a colleague did, and instead shifted to what is it that we want students to do? What is the purpose of our language arts class? Well, we want them to communicate at high levels. We want them to read and make meaning at high levels. We want them to consider who their task, what the task is, who their audience is, what their purpose is, and think about how communication changes and that we have multiple genre for the same topic. I mean, we can look at, there's going to be so much on the pandemic, but in time when people aren't traumatized by it, we'll look back at poetry and art and essays and videos and TikToks and, I mean, all of these things to study that time in our lives, and it's all different. So one of the things I love about the book and what happened with the book was when we were choosing the cover of the book, I ended up choosing a cover that is an illustrated girl reading who represents me or my daughter and our identity as a reader. And then each chapter has a different reader because everybody has a different identity in the classroom. So I believe that our classrooms are engaging when we give students opportunities to figure out who they are while they're learning. And inquiry provides that, and choice provides that. I had read no young adult books before I started teaching that reading class because my identity as a reader, I like nonfiction. I like memoirs. I like biographies. I like to read true stories. But like you were saying, students start talking about these books and they're so excited about it. Like, oh yeah, I need to read that. And then they feel so empowered because they talked their teacher into reading a book that she never would have picked up if it hadn't been for them. And then I think the other way that we made it enjoyable was our young people want to make contributions. They want to feel like what they're doing is meaningful. So I looked for those opportunities for the authentic learning. It wasn't with every unit. You can't go out into the community all day, every day. But we took our small group communication unit, it's what we used to call it, and instead looked at what kind of difference can we make in our community. Could be our class community. Maybe there's something in here we want to change. They were quick to make me take down my cheesy posters and let's put something else up. Those are, Dr. McCarty, those are dumb. I used my own money for those. Nice. You mean they're dumb? So they did their own life mottos and their quotes and created their own art for the classroom. That was easy. I took it a little personally, but we made that change. In our school community, the soap had been taken out of our bathrooms because they were not adhered in a way to keep other things besides soap in them. But our students didn't like that. They wanted soap in the bathroom. So that became their project. They did all the research. They found what kind of soap can we bring in and who can pay for it and went to student council. And our kids made lots of changes. And they learned, too, when I had a group give their presentation to the completely wrong audience. And so they didn't get what they wanted. But they learned that, someone else in the school is the decision maker. We should have gone there. And then I had students, we were working on a fluency unit, talk about reading aloud. Students didn't want to read aloud when you're in ninth grade. But I needed them to because they needed to work on it. So I had them do cold reading on their own, recording themselves, reading books. And then we did a bunch of fun games on how you bring expression into your reading and why that's important. And then they re-recorded it. And that was going to be the end of the unit. Good job. You learned. Great. You applied it. But they came to me and said, can we go to the elementary school. We want to read. We want to read to the kids and be able to read with this expression. And I was like, yes, we can, because we can walk there. I don't even have to get a bus. So looking for those opportunities to make a contribution brought a lot of joy to the classroom.
That's awesome. I love it. I love it, because anytime you can figure out those things that make them go, huh, all right, this is not bad, all right? You know, it's like, yes, and, I mean, it's just, that's great stuff, because that's what you're looking for. And, you know, and then maybe it you might overhear them at lunchtime talking to other ones about, you know, I never thought this character from English was going to be good, but, you know, I actually kind of, you know, those conversations, they may not admit it once they get to home or something, like, yeah, we didn't do anything today, but, you know. Love it. Love it. We're getting close to finishing up now. And if someone wanted to follow up and connect with you and or learn more, where would you send them?
You can go to my personal website, which is jenniferplucker.com. My company's website is MackinLearning, MackinLearning.com. Or you can find me on Twitter at Jen Plucker.
Very cool. I'll have that information in the show notes, so it's easy for them to find and connect with you. So good stuff. So I got two last questions for you that I like to ask my guests. And the first one goes like this. How do you keep going when so much is going on that you may want to quit?
So in our family, we always had the motto of if we commit to something, we're going to follow through with that. And that's what helped us keep our kids from quitting stuff when it got hard. You know, if start piano lessons and they're like, this, I don't like this, I want to quit. We're like, we will reevaluate at the end of this school year, but we've committed and we follow through on our commitments. And same was true for dance and hockey and, you know, all the things that they wanted to try. So they needed to follow through on the commitments. And I think about that for myself too. If I make a commitment to something, I'm going to follow through on it. I'm not going to quit. I did want to quit writing the book, but we don't do that in our families. So I'm going to follow through. At the same time, I think the biggest thing that I'm learning to do, though, is to maybe not make some commitments. I tend to be a person who overcommits, and I'm really trying to let some commitments sunset and recognize if I don't have the capacity to give what I want to give and feel really good about it, then it's time for me to let that sunset and not overcommit. That's the harder part for me.
Oh, I understand that. Believe me, I do. Yeah, it's like something my brain says, so just say no, just say no. And the other side of my brain says, oh, no, shut up. Yes, okay, we'll do that, yeah. It's like, oh, what did I do? Good stuff. Last question. Do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? If so, who was it, and what would you say if given the chance to say thank you?
A lot of teachers in my life, but the one that comes to mind was actually my 10th grade social studies teacher, Mr. Buss. He saw gifts in me that I didn't see in myself. He came up to me after class one day, and he handed me a little slip of paper that was an invitation to audition for the high school speech team. And I was like, have you met me? I have said no words in your class. I don't talk. I'm really quiet. You know, I was like that straight A student that just came in, did her work, quiet. And I would be social with my friends maybe somewhere, but definitely not in class. And his response was, you have a voice. I've seen it in your writing and you need to use it. And if he hadn't taken the time to see that in me, to say something to me, I never would have gone out for my high school speech team. I did go out. I ended up captain my senior year. I did collegiate speech, and now I do public speaking for a career. So thank you, Mr. Buss, if you're listening. I haven't seen him in many years, but he changed my life.
That's awesome. I love it. Jen, thank you so much for sharing your book, Inspiring Lifelong Readers, Using Inquiry to Engage Learners in Grades 6 through 12. What an awesome book. Your focus is so practical and user-friendly and just so cool. Thank you so much. Wishing you the best in all you do.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Hey, you have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast to help you help kids achieve their dreams. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a member of the Education Podcast Network.
Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a member of the podcast network based in Canada called Voice Ed Radio. Voice Ed Radio, your voice is right here. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Hey, thanks for listening. It would be awesome if you visited my website at stephenmaletto.com and connected with me, left a review, and listened to more episodes. And by the way, you could also share it with your friends, with your family, and your colleagues. Thanks so much. You're awesome.